You're listening to Beyond the Ribbon, a podcast of the Cancer Survivorship Center, powered by 24 Hours in the Canyon. This podcast is brought to you by Auto Inc. Auto Inc. is a distinguished family of dealerships redefining automotive excellence. Be sure to check out their website at autoinc.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Beyond the Ribbon. My name is Ryan Parnell, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host and oncology nurse, Pam McMillan.
Hey Ryan, how are you today?
Pam, I am good. I'm really good. How about yourself?
I'm good. Can you believe that we're almost to the end of the year?
No. You know, I haven't even started Christmas shopping. Lots to do between now and the end of the year. How about you?
Well, I'm in the same boat. So, but you know, every year, I think you and I discuss the podcast, and what it's probably one of our favorite things to do because we learn, but we also bring this material to people that might really need to know. And you know, the topic today is near and dear to my heart too. So, I'm excited to learn all the new updates in genetics.
Yeah, you know, you're right. When we talk about at the beginning of the year, sitting down and what topics we want to cover and what things we need to, who we need to talk to and where, how are we going to find speakers and so forth. Genetics is one of those ones. I think that if you've been listening to our podcast for the last almost 5 years now, Pam, can you believe that?
I can't believe that crazy idea.
Yeah.
And 5 years ago.
We have talked about genetics almost every year, but the reason for that is it is ever evolving, right?
Right.
And so it's important to stay on top of that. It's important to be updated and keep in touch. And what more, what better way to stay in touch with someone than the same guest we've had on every one of our genetic topics? I remember, Pam, when we talked about who are we going to have for genetics? We stressed about it. And lo and behold, we stumbled across this person who lives in the DFW area, practically our neighbor. And she has joined us again and actually brought a friend. So let me tell you about our guests, plural guests today. Dominie Mora. Dominie is a board-certified genetic counselor and oncology medical science liaison with Myriad Oncology. Pam, she brings over 25 years of experience in cancer genetics and is deeply committed to advancing care through education and collaboration. Dominie, how are you?
I'm good. Glad to be back here. Thanks for inviting me again.
Thank you so much. And thank you for bringing one of your coworkers, Kimberly Carrion. Kimberly is an account executive with Myriad Oncology and a registered mammographer, which goes hand in hand, obviously, right? With a strong passion for improving oncology care, she is dedicated to supporting oncology and breast imaging teams with exceptional service and partnership. Kimberly, thank you for joining us this morning.
Yes. Nice to meet you guys.
You know, Dominie, you've been on our podcast two other times, and many times you would think if we're going to have a third go around with someone, it might be very boring and stale, and we've already discussed all this stuff, and we've talked about this, but that is not the case with genetics, right?
Yes. Cancer or genetics is always evolving. We are learning more and more, I feel like, every day.
Yeah.
So when you talk about genetics, let's just start with the basics. What does that mean to get genetic testing?
Genetic testing is typically a blood test. So when we're talking about hereditary cancer genetic testing, it's a blood test or a saliva test. And we're looking at those cells, and they're the white blood cells in there, and looking at the genes to look for abnormalities in those genes. I was going to say, sometimes the word genetic testing is also used for tumor testing, yes. And it can get confusing. So it's nice to be able to differentiate if we're talking about something that's hereditary or when we're talking about genetic testing of the tumor to help determine treatment options.
So hereditary meaning passed down from generation to generation.
Yes.
Okay.
So I have a real quick question, and I know someone out there listening is thinking this exact question, so I'm going to ask it for them. You just said it's either a blood test or saliva test. So is one better than the other, or what is the difference in that?
They're both accurate. Sometimes people don't have an opportunity to get their blood drawn. And so a saliva sample, your buccal cells in your mouth have white blood cells in them, and we can get the DNA from them. It's the same DNA we get from our blood cells.
So it's kind of like the proverbial, those tests that were coming out, genealogy tests and so forth, a little swab and you send it off. But this is, of course, way more scientific than figuring out who your great aunt was on your paternal side.
I call that recreational genetic testing.
I love that. Wait a minute. Recreational genetic testing. Okay. I don't know. That just popped in my head. But I think that's a good point to make between the blood and the saliva. So let's talk, because I think we want to talk a lot about the hereditary side of genetic testing. What exactly does that, you know, it sounds really Star Trek-ish. You know, what exactly does that look like?
Well, it's actually been around for over 30 years now. So we've been, as a medical community, offering it for quite a while. But we're hoping to determine if somebody is at high risk for cancer and determine if they need to be doing anything different with their screening or even risk reduction. And we can get into those details in a minute. Or we're actually offering testing to cancer patients to see what made them predisposed or at high risk to get cancer in the first place. So when we're doing the testing, it's almost like a mystery, and we're trying to solve what's going on by doing that blood or saliva test and looking at that DNA.
So how does one qualify for genetic testing?
Very good question. If there is a personal history of certain types of cancer, so if somebody has had breast cancer at any age, ovarian, endometrial, colorectal, pancreatic, metastatic prostate. I feel like I'm missing one. But one of those six cancers at pretty much any age or any combination of, or even without a family history, they're eligible for testing. But if they don't have a personal diagnosis and have a family history of cancer, such as a mom or an aunt, with breast cancer under 50, or a relative with ovarian or other, some of those other cancers I mentioned before. So just having enough family history and or a personal history of cancer.
And those criteria have changed over the years, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
They've gotten a lot easier. I don't know if you want to speak to that a little bit as well, Kim, but they've gotten a lot easier over the years where it's become less complicated to determine who's eligible for testing. And there's actually even software that can help. There's, you know, what do you call those, checklists, different things that providers can use or patients can use to determine if they're eligible for testing. Because the family history piece can sometimes get a little confusing when you don't know some of that extended family. Mm-hmm. I'd say these days, even with a limited family history, some people could qualify for testing.
You know, I think I remember back when I started in the oncology world, and Pam, you can probably remember too, it was really when genetic testing was just kind of like starting and getting going. And it was like mainly just for breast. That's like, I don't know if it was only for breast or if that was just kind of what we always heard about was, you know, do you have this gene? Do you have that gene? And it was testing and it was like, okay, so what do we do with that? You know, there was a lot of,
I think the criteria was what was limiting. And so, you know, you had to be over 50, you had to have this, you had to have that. And now It seems like it's more simplified where we're getting more people tested. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah, I think you're right, that criteria. But also at the very beginning, I mean, I think BRCA1 and 2 were the main genes. I mean, there were a few others, but I don't think there was barely awareness about those two, much less some of the other types of hereditary cancer syndromes that were out there.
Which probably, I would assume, led to skepticism maybe, or, you know, it just didn't sound like this was something I really needed to do. So Kim, could you speak to, like, how is it easiest, or how do we find out if I qualify or need to be genetic tested? You know, Dominique hinted at that a little bit. Could you speak a little bit to that just to kind of clarify that?
Yeah. So there, like Dominique was talking about, there's electronic screening methods. So there's some clinics that I work with where they actually send out a link prior to the patient coming in for their visit, and the patient's able to fill that information out from home, where they can reach out to family members and, you know, make sure they're providing an accurate, you know, family history of the cancer in their family. There's also paper screening methods. So this is one we used in the clinic that I worked at. I worked at a busy breast imaging center here in Lubbock, and the patients would just kind of check yes and no. And so it made it easy for the technologist to review that screener and then work that into their workflow and offer, you know, have the conversation with the patient. It's an added service that your offices are able to provide for the patients. You know, they're coming in, for instance, at a breast imaging clinic for breast cancer screening. And so now they're being provided with a comprehensive cancer screening and then the, you know, opportunity to leave a sample if they would like to proceed with hereditary cancer testing. So
is that tool available to the normal population that they can go out? They're listening to this podcast and they want to know if they qualify. Can they go out to that website, or do they have to have the physician give them that website?
That's a good question. I don't know. Do we have one that's live?
On our website, I think you can kind of, if you don't have a provider to offer you genetic testing, you could probably look at that criteria that's on the website. And there are resources that we have that we're linked to third-party companies. I think it's called DNA Test is our third-party company. It's on Myriad's website, who someone could use to do their genetic testing remotely. So that is legitimate. It is, you know, the same testing you would get if you went to a provider's office. It's just an easier way to do it. Somebody might not have a good primary care doctor, or a woman, or might not have an OB/GYN she's seen in a long time. So they want to be able to just do that testing sooner rather than later. And they can take that into their own hands and do that.
Yeah. And, you know, we always talk about going to legitimate, you know, trustworthy sites. And so let's give that Myriad website, Domini or Kim. I think that's important that our listeners know that as you said, it's legitimate. It goes to third party sites that are, you know, vetted, and it's worth looking into.
I think just typing in Myriad Genetics will get you to our website.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if you want to say the exact link. Kim, I see typing it in.
I know, I'm pulling it up. I always just type in Myriad Genetics and it pops right up. Myriad's been around for so many years, I feel like. So I don't know. So Myriad is spelled Myriad and then just genetics, GENETICS.
So you can just type in myriad.com, I think, and it'll just come up. Okay.
Go right to it. So whenever they go to, let's say, go get a mammogram and they fill out that checklist and it, you know, you do, you have the criteria to have that. Where does a patient go to get the testing? Is it up to the patient? Is it up to the facility to tell them that they qualify? And then the next question I'm sure there people have is the cost.
Yeah. So, you know, there needs to be an ordering provider. So it's just kind of like anything in the medical field. If you're going to get lab work done or, you know, an x-ray or anything like that, then an order has to be written. So it's essentially the same thing with genetic testing. So you do need to have your provider order the testing. So if it's at a breast imaging center, that can look a little different. A lot of the breast centers will work with a genetics provider within the community. And so that's typically the ordering provider for the test. So whenever it's offered at an imaging center, they generally have it on site where the patient can leave their sample before they leave, you know, their imaging appointment. Or sometimes they'll schedule them to come back or, you know, meet with the genetics provider in the community. So it really looks different all over the place. But yes, they can't. Well, and Domini, there is that on the website that you were talking about. I'll let you speak to that. So if someone doesn't have an ordering provider, there is another opportunity.
I actually said DNA test earlier. It's actually called DNA visit. I put a link in our chat here, but if you can go through myriad.com, and if you go to the patient site and then you get started and you say you don't have a provider, or you're just busy and you don't have time to go to your provider or get in for a long time, it's a way to do it virtually with that third party company, DNA visit.
So it sounds like pretty much for breast, obviously that's where genetics began, and those imaging centers, if you're getting your mammogram, which of course we recommend you follow those screening guidelines, they're pretty well skilled at asking the questions, giving you the questionnaire to fill out to see if you have a high risk for the genes or need to be genetic tested based on your family. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, we whenever we partner with centers that offer testing to their patients, we provide education, and we also have Dominie being a genetic counselor, she works with all of my accounts, and so she is a resource for the clinical staff. So she doesn't work with the patients that they see. We have another separate team, but it's patient facing. But Dominie is their clinical support, and so. They'll reach out, we provide general basic training. So that way they, and we do ongoing training too. So we like to meet with them regularly, and I'll bring Dominie in, for, just ongoing training. And that's honestly where I learned my, information that I know is from my Myriad, account. So, yeah.
So the next question that Pam had, right? What is the cost? Because it sounds like, oh my heavens. And yeah. I know listeners are going, this is great. This is all good. But if how in the world is it covered?
It used to be not affordable. I remember whenever this first kind of started out, I wanted testing for my own, self. And everywhere I went, nobody really, they either didn't know about Myriad, because I actually found Myriad many years ago, early 2000s, when y'all were talking about it was really known for breast cancer. We have my mom and grandmother were diagnosed with breast cancer within the same year. And I could not obtain testing. And I found one provider that was familiar with it. She didn't know how to order it. She said, it's like in the thousands of dollars. And so I just kind of dropped it. But Dominie, I'll let you speak more on how the price has kind of evolved. It is affordable now, thankfully.
It's definitely come down, but I'd say most, if someone meets criteria, most insurance companies do pay for a good chunk of the test, maybe even 100% of it. It's considered preventive. Overall, I think we quote 95% of patients pay zero. And of those ones that do pay, we do have a maximum cash price of $249 if they choose that route. If they choose not to use their insurance. So if they have a copay with their insurance, that might be an unmet deductible, which we're about to start a new year. And if they have a new deductible, they could pay maybe a couple hundred or $300-$400, depending on what their personal and family history is like. And then they could be offered that $249 cash price then, which they could even pay out. They wouldn't even have to pay that upfront.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a lot more affordable, but we recommend they try to use their insurance first, and Myriad will notify them with their coverages so they don't have to go in or confirm they want the test and go forward with the testing. They do have that opportunity to cancel if they find out their insurance isn't going to pay for some reason, or if they have a very high deductible and a high copay and they can't afford the $249 or don't want to pay it out, then they can always cancel the test while it's still running.
So the test isn't even done until the patient is contacted.
It started, but not completed. It's because it takes about 10 days. So,
wow. So can we get into specific genetic testing for maybe breast, colon, prostate? Can we start with breast cancer?
So when it comes to breast cancer, a lot of people might have heard of the genes BRCA1 and 2. So those have been around for a long time. Angelina Jolie came out talking about testing positive for BRCA1. Goodness, that was over 12 years ago now. But we have about 10 other breast cancer genes that we test for that are not quite as commonly positive as BRCA1-2. So about half the time when somebody tests positive for a breast cancer gene, it's still either BRCA1 or BRCA2. The other half of the time, it's one of those other genes. Some of those I can name are called CHECK2, ATM, PALB2. There's a whole slew of them. But when somebody gets genetic testing done now, they get tested for the whole, a big panel. At Myriad, it's a 63-gene panel, and it's across 11 different cancer types. And of those, about, I think about 11 or 12 of them are actual breast cancer genes.
Wow.
You know, a lot of patients also come back with this variant of uncertain significance. What is that?
So when we do genetic testing, there are three categories of results. Somebody could be positive. That means that there is a mutation. And to back up a second, our genes are supposed to work a certain way and have a certain code. Mm-hmm. And when it's accurate, and it's looking like it should, it's normal. And if we find something, it could be just a benign change. It's kind of like spell check when we're doing the genetic testing on that gene. Sorry, give me 1 second. So a positive result means there's a mutation in that gene and the gene doesn't work anymore. So we know that gene's disrupted. It's not doing what it's supposed to do anymore. And that's what we call either, you know, a deleterious mutation. Some people call it pathogenic variant. It's called positive. And a negative means those genes didn't have any significant abnormalities that affect the function of the gene. But sometimes we find changes where it's not clear if it's a positive or negative. Is it actually disrupting the gene function or not? So we call that a VUS.
Are those more common now that the more genetic testing is done? Are more people coming up with a VUS?
Unfortunately, the more genes you test, as testing is newer, and you do see a little more VUSs. So we just expanded our panel from 48 to 63 genes. It's normal to expect as those genes are newly tested and we don't know as much about them, that we will see a few more VUSs at first. And as we learn more about that gene, it'll go down.
So it's going to get more specific the longer that you're testing for those genes. So from 48 to 63 different genes, Pam, that's mind-blowing.
That's a lot of genes to test and to make sure that, you know, but what the benefit is probably far greater, you know. They're testing more genes. They're finding out more information. We're more aware. And so that's awesome.
Yeah. And Kimberly, I would assume there's probably more genes coming down the pipeline, right?
Well, you know, science is always evolving. And our gene table is all national guideline based. And so as those national guidelines, so such as NCCN and the ASCO guidelines, as they're evolving, you know, with different studies that are being done, you know, we're going to keep up with the science and, you know, we're also continuing to do our science on the back end, which Dominique can talk into more detail on that. But our recent update, you know, with that gene panel expanding from 48 genes to 63 genes, we just released that less than 30 days ago. But it's our gene table 100% meets the national guidelines. So we have 100% of the NCCN. The genes mentioned in the NCCN guidelines, and we have 100% of the strongly recommended genes mentioned in the ASCO guidelines because that's important for the patients.
So testing these 63 genes is something new that just came out.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
Cutting edge. And,
yes.
But I think this is, I want to make sure this is like, this isn't like your first rodeo. Like you're not testing like, The next person getting tested is not like the 10th person to be tested for these 63 genes, right?
No, there was an in-depth internal validation of all of these as we added these 15 genes before they were added to the panel.
Yeah.
So that's something we are continuously working on. We're working on another half a dozen to be updated sometime next year.
Wow. Dominique, let's move to another one that is very common here in our region, and I know it's very common cancer period, but let's talk about prostate cancer.
So prostate cancer is fairly common. I think, you know, people hear that as men get older, there's that increased risk. But about 10 to 12% of metastatic prostate cancer can actually be genetic or hereditary. So I think people tend to think, well, it happens to a lot of people, so it's probably not genetic. And then that percentage of metastatic prostate cancer that's genetic, some of those are become really, really aggressive. So it's very helpful when we're talking about prostate cancer to, I mean, in my opinion, to know earlier is better, you know, in that diagnosis to help determine, you know, was that prostate cancer due to somebody having a BRCA2 mutation? If so, we know those cancers can be more aggressive and progress a lot quicker. Whereas a lot of times when you hear people having prostate cancer, you hear it being very indolent. People can live with it a very long time. It's really helpful to figure out where somebody is in that spectrum. But we probably have another, I'm trying to think how many genes predispose to prostate cancer, probably 8 to 10 genes that predispose to prostate cancer. So it's very helpful when we're doing genetic testing. And then also if somebody has prostate cancer and if they're spread along and it's metastatic castration resistant, they're actually eligible for a PARP inhibitor. So it can even affect their chemotherapy options if they are determined to be BRCA1 or BRCA2 or even one of the other genes in the BRCA pathway. They can be eligible for a PARP inhibitor. And again, tumor testing is also helpful for prostate cancer because that can also help determine eligibility for medicine. So genetic testing not only helps determine what caused the cancer, what the aggressiveness is of the cancer, it can help determine treatment options for the cancer. It can also help the family members. It can help determine what secondary cancer risks are. I mean, there's so many reasons, in particular with prostate cancer, to do it. Kim, I mean, I think you talked to a provider who had a lot of them in their clinic, and we really think it's being under-tested.
Mm-hmm. Under-tested for prostate cancer.
Yeah.
I qualifies like for testing.
What was that?
Who qualifies for testing for prostate cancer?
You have to either be 55 or younger or have a metastatic prostate cancer or have additional family history of related cancer in addition to prostate cancer. So that one is a little more complex. But usually if somebody's seeing a medical oncologist for their prostate cancer, it's probably advanced to that point where they hopefully should be getting genetic testing. And unfortunately, I think people just get so focused on the treatment side that the genetic testing gets pushed to the back burner.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think it seems like, Pam, and maybe that's part of it, we're seeing quite a bit of metastatic prostate cancer here at our survivorship center. And to hear that it's under-tested is a little alarming.
You know, and I think sometimes patients resist doing genetic testing, but I mean, Dominique just said, you know, all the benefits that it can benefit you in your treatments, can benefit your families. And there's more to genetic testing than finding out that you have this gene.
Yeah, especially, right? Yeah, I've already got the cancer. Why do I need to know about what it is? They're right. I mean, how many times have you heard that?
Well, I don't want to get it because I already have it. What's the point, right? Yeah.
The number one reason people don't get genetic testing done is not because of insurance. It's not because they don't want to know. It's because it wasn't offered to them.
Wow. Okay. So our listeners are saying, well, it wasn't offered to me. So where do we need to point them so that they can go ask their physician, do I qualify for genetic testing?
Yeah.
Well, if it's, you know, they're already, if let's say the patient already has cancer, your cancer centers do have access to hereditary cancer testing. So if it's a patient that they've already had a personal history of cancer and they're seeing an oncologist, they can, you know, just ask your doctor, hey, you know, can I get hereditary cancer testing? I want to see if I qualify. You know, I understand they're, I've beat my cancer, you know, or, you know, my odds are looking good with my cancer. I have a risk of a secondary cancer and I want to, you know, stay on top of that, or, you know, I'm concerned about my family is what I think most people kind of decide to do it for. But so they can ask their oncology team. Now, let's say they don't have cancer. You know, they could go to the Myriad website. I think that's probably going to be easiest. But they can always ask their primary care, their OBGYN, to see if they can maybe help them with that.
Yeah. Pam, I'm hearing one word that Kimberly is saying, and she said it about four times, is ask.
Ask.
You know, just because it's not offered to you doesn't mean you don't qualify, doesn't mean you don't need it, doesn't mean you shouldn't have this done. It can mean a number of things. You need to ask, do I qualify for this? Should I have this? It's your right. And it's something that, unfortunately, maybe you just need to ask your provider, make an appointment, and tell them you're coming in for this. I want to come in and talk about genetics. I think this is a good segue too, Pam, to highlight the reasonings. Well, not just the reason that you do the treatment summaries and care plans, but I think it's vitally important that those that are going through your treatment, when you're finished with your treatment, to get a care plan and a treatment summary so that your family knows and generations down the line know what kind of cancer you had. And I know you guys talk about genetics, right, Pam?
Yes. You know, one of the biggest things is a lot of people don't want to open that can of worms. They didn't want to do the genetic testing. And I'm able to educate them, you know, go ask your doctor, see if you qualify. You know, there's more to just finding out that you have this gene and it can benefit the rest of your family, not just your kids, but your aunts, your uncles, your sisters, your brothers, all of it. So, you know, it could save somebody's life.
You guys, is there, you know, we touched on two of the types of cancers that are genetically tested for. Is there colon, ovarian, and pancreatic? And I think I'm missing one.
Uterine endometrial, I think.
Oh, uterine endometrial. Okay. Right. Yes. Is there anything that you guys would like to hit on those? Not to say that they're not as important as breast and prostate. They're just not as prominent as breast and prostate. Is there anything else you'd like to share on those?
I'd say for colorectal, it is also definitely under-tested. So colorectal cancer is probably breast cancer is probably 2.5 times more common than breast. Breast cancer is 2.5 times more common than colon cancer. But colon cancer genetic testing, when we see like numbers and what cancer centers are doing and how often they're doing testing, we usually see about a 10-to-1 ratio. So for every 10 breast cancer patients being tested, only one colon cancer patient is being tested. If that, sometimes it's even lower. And the criteria did change about a couple years ago, so it's fairly recent, but hopefully we will start seeing those ratios be closer to the diagnosis ratios, because every colorectal cancer patient is eligible for genetic testing. It's just not talked about as much. The awareness isn't there. The publicity isn't there. I feel like it's just something we try to talk about more and more. With March being Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, we do try and talk about it a little bit more leading up to that and during that month, but I feel like it's not like breast cancer as far as the awareness and attention that it gets, which is, you know, it is more prominent and it is more common. So I've heard a statistic about, like, there's something called Lynch syndrome. It's a hereditary cancer syndrome. Only 5% of the people who have Lynch syndrome know they have it.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Now, did I hear you correct? Every patient that has been diagnosed with colon cancer qualifies.
Yes. Colon or rectal, either one.
Wow. It is under-tested for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So something to keep in mind, I guess, when you're doing your survivorship, because they might not have been eligible for testing when they were first diagnosed, or for some reason it was missed.
And that brings up a great point. You know, breast cancer criteria have changed. All the criteria have changed over the years. Just because you didn't qualify maybe whenever you were first diagnosed, you may qualify now. So exactly. The most important thing is to ask your physician, do I qualify?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you may be saying, I didn't have breast, I didn't have colon, I didn't have prostate, I didn't have ovarian or pancreatic or uterine. You know, they don't have genetic testing for me, for my cancer. Well, they might very soon. Again, right? So staying on top of that, staying on top and asking, you know, have they done genetic testing for stomach cancer? Have they done, you know, whatever type of cancer you have? Again, I think it's important to ask your provider about that. You know, so basically you said if you have colon cancer, but that's the same thing for the rest of those, right? If you have ovarian, you have pancreatic, you have uterine, you qualify for testing.
Yes.
Period.
The only qualifier with the six we talked about is prostate being metastatic.
Right.
That's pretty simple to keep them all straight. What about those people, you know, you talk about doing more gene testing. So let's say someone had genetic testing before these 63 genes were tested. Are they in the system for life? Do they get retested? How does that work?
That's the question of the day we're getting a lot right now with this updated panel. So we do not keep a patient's sample after, so 60 days afterwards, we de-identify the sample and it can be used for research, but we're not keeping that patient's sample to use for them any longer. Mm-hmm. So if a patient is interested in getting tested again, we would need a new sample. So they would need to go back to their provider and ask them. And let them know they want to get retested, or ask their provider, hey, I got genetic testing 5 years ago. Is there an update to this test? Is there anything new? Is there new technology? So even though they asked before, they are welcome to ask again. And now even somebody who just got tested 6 months ago or a year ago can get an update test. It doesn't have to be 5 years. Just because the panel just got updated, they don't have to wait in order to do it unless they just choose to wait for their next appointment, I guess.
And in a case like that, are they tested for the whole panel or are they tested just for the new panel?
They're tested for all the genes again. The way the technology is and the way the testing's done on that platform, it's simpler just to test for all the genes. And there have been some small enhancements on some of the existing genes as well. So we know that it's just more efficient to go ahead and just test for both a full panel. They don't typically get charged. I mean, they could up to that $249, but sometimes update testing doesn't even cost anything. It depends on their insurance. So it's, you know, not like they will necessarily have to pay another round of money. It just depends on what their coverage is and what it was the first time, what insurance they have, you know, all those kinds of things.
It's very good to know. Very good to know.
Mm-hmm. So what if a patient, okay, they do the genetic testing and that comes back positive. Now what? I have this test. It tells me I'm positive. Where do they look for information or help whenever they get a positive result?
The report actually has a lot of great information in it right there. It tells what that gene is, what the risks are for cancer, and the different surveillance recommendations. So hopefully their provider will review that with them to a certain extent. Our website has that information on it's called Myriad Gene Table. You could Google that and you'll find our Myriad Gene Table as well. It has that information. But also it's helpful to see a genetics trained specialist if possible. There are a couple in Amarillo. There's a few throughout West Texas. Myriad has genetic counselors someone can talk to on the phone to understand the result better. But probably even more helpful to see somebody local so they can refer you to the local specialists. So if you're at high risk for breast cancer, to make sure you're getting your breast MRI, you might want to make sure you're seeing the person who could order that for you if your own doctor can't. If you're at high risk for pancreatic cancer, making sure you're getting into the gastroenterologist who can order an endoscopic or perform an endoscopic ultrasound or an MRI. You know, whatever it could be appropriate. So making sure you're seeing the appropriate specialists, which are listed out in the report, but you could also see a genetics trained person in your area to kind of help coordinate all that. And you're fortunate you do have someone at your center that can help with that.
You know, that's really comforting to know that if you are, you know, if you're listening and you're skeptical, you know, it gets carried throughout the entire process. It's not like, well, here's your results, good luck. There are resources to talk to. There are people to visit with. There are, even if you don't have one where you are, if you're not listening from Amarillo, you're listening from somewhere else, and that there is, unfortunately, there is not someone, then Myriad has the resource that you can reach out to and speak to someone and help understand all of those specifics. That's the best news of the whole thing, because we all have questions. And I know, Pam, you get lots of questions. We're very fortunate to have our resource of Pam here at the Survivorship Center to help guide you guys that come through our doors. But we know not everyone's as fortunate as we are.
That's right. Is there any other cancers that you would like to talk about that have genetic testing?
There are some rare cancer types like kidney, medullary thyroid, retinoblastoma. There's some endocrine cancers. There's something called paraganglioma and pheochromocytoma, you know, so sarcomas even. There's a lot of rare cancer types that also can qualify for genetic testing. So I think it's helpful to, even if it's one of those cancer types, to ask your provider. Even certain hematological malignancies, when there's certain types or patterns to that in the family, while Myriad might not offer that testing, there are tests for those other types as well. So still important. If there's a concern or a pattern, a young age, something rare, multiple cancers, we always used to say young, rare, and multiple. You know, if it's any of those things, just to make sure to bring that up to your doctor, and hopefully that they can address that.
Yeah. Again, advocate for yourself. I know we hit that on several times. I think it's important to continue to say that. You know, sometimes I have to be told 7 or 8 times to do something. Pam would probably agree to be reminded. So it's important to advocate for yourself. Now, listen, you guys, before we kind of get wrapped up here to our last segment, I hesitate to even ask, because we could probably do another hour's worth of talking, but give us a sneak peek, if you will, because I know you know, Domini, being on the science side, what's next in genetics?
Well, turning to the other genes we'll add next year, and we'll keep adding other genes to our panel. There's a test that we're developing called molecular residual disease. It's called MRD, and it's a way to monitor a cancer to help determine if it's coming back. It can also be used to help determine if treatments are working for a patient, or even used prognostically to help determine how aggressive that cancer might be and what level of treatment they might even need. So this MRD testing is fairly new. We are investing a lot of research into that and should be coming out with that test sometime next year.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. You heard it here first. Listen, that just means we have to have you guys back next year to definitely come back with another update on genetics. And I would assume, as you said, maybe from 63 to who knows how many genes, much less the new testing that's being done. Gosh, Pam, I love this kind of stuff, the science behind this. It just kind of gets me excited, and I hope that our listeners are as well, as to the benefits that science is making.
Absolutely. You know, and if you ever have any questions, just make sure you ask, you know, and the more information you know, the better maybe your diagnosis can be, your prognosis, and your treatment. So genetics is fascinating. And I think, you know, there's probably a lot more to come in years to come.
That's right.
Yeah. That brings us to our last segment. It is our Auto Inc. inspiring moment. We like to leave our listeners with an inspiring moment. Do you guys have one that you could share with us?
I'm going to let Kim do that, because it's a personal story and I think it's really inspiring.
Oh, yeah. So I shared earlier in the podcast that, you know, my mother and grandmother were both diagnosed with breast cancer within the same year of each other. This was early 2000s, you know, we touched on earlier, you know, when genetic testing first came out, it was primarily focused on breast. And, you know, so my grandmother was, she eventually got tested, and they had the same oncologist, and her results were negative. So the oncologist told my mom, I don't think you need to get testing. And really at this point in my life, we didn't have a whole lot of cancer in our family. My mom and grandmother were the only cancer really that we were aware of at the time. So my mom did not do testing. My grandmother was stage 4 upon her diagnosis of breast cancer. So she would, pass couple of years after this. And then my mom was stage 3 when she was diagnosed. So she lived about 10 years. And right before she passed away, her oncologist said, "Hey, there's been a lot of updates with this hereditary cancer testing. Let's go ahead and get you tested." So this was 10 years later, and my mom actually came back BRCA2 positive. And looking at my family tree now, we have a lot of cancer in our family. Where, when you look at when I have to fill out, the history forms and put my family history in there, if someone doesn't raise an eyebrow, I'm like, "Did you review my history?" And so it's really important, we talked about earlier, is patients that may be tested previously or, as guidelines change, it's really important to ask for testing. Because if the oncologist wouldn't have offered this testing to my mom, we wouldn't know that we carry, a BRCA2 mutation, which puts, I ended up being negative, thankfully. But if I would have been positive, I would have an 87% risk, up to 87% risk of breast cancer. So it's given me, a sense of relief, because every day when I woke up, I knew I was going to be diagnosed with breast cancer, like my mom and my grandmother, and have a daughter. So it's just been really helpful to have that negative result. And that's what's kind of given me the passion to help others and, make sure they're getting this information. About half of my family is positive for the mutation, but they've all been tested. They're able to start their screening sooner. Family members that have done preventative surgeries to reduce the risk. So it's really, it's been helpful. So.
Yeah. Wow.
More you know. It's like that old commercial that was on TV.
Yeah. Knowledge really is powerful. Yeah. And, Pam, I know that we've talked about this. Sometimes people say, I don't want to know. I think it's important. And it's not only, as Kimberly just attested to, it's not only as important, not only important for the person needing to be tested or being tested, but the downstream, grandchildren, children, and so forth. So thank you, Kimberly, for sharing that. And gosh, I can't imagine not wanting to know, Pam.
There are people out there, but, just remember it affects everybody that you are related to. So the more you know.
That's right. Well, thank you, Dominie. Thank you, Kimberly, for joining us today and for sharing your expertise. Pam, it's cool. I don't know a better way to say it. It's just cool to learn about where science is heading. I'm kind of a nerd like that, but it makes me really thankful that we have this available. And it makes me thankful that there are people in this area, that, especially for us, who are knowledgeable about it and can be resources for our patients.
That's right. So when you do that checklist and there's a red flag, you need to make sure that you ask for that right person.
Yep. Yep.
More importantly, share this episode. Share this with your family members or someone that has been diagnosed. So, even though they may not have qualified back when they were diagnosed, and criteria have changed, and maybe they will get tested.
That's right. Or retested and checked again. That's mm-hmm. something I didn't even think about. And I think that's important to bring up. Listen, you guys listening at home, this has been a great year of podcasts. We're not done yet. We've got several more coming. We encourage you to stay tuned, share these podcasts, make sure that you subscribe and stay up to date with all of the unique and crazy topics that we managed to come up with, and make sure you join us next time for another great episode of Beyond the Ribbon.
Thanks again for listening to Beyond the Ribbon. We'd like to extend a special thanks to the Auto Inc. family of dealerships, as they have supported the 24 Hours in the Canyon Cancer Survivorship Center since 2016. For more information on the Cancer Survivorship Center, please visit our website at 24survivorship.org.